in Costa Rica, by the way, which it was like Switzerland not long ago. It was an exception in Central America. They were quite, it's like a social democratic reformist setup, as Sri Lanka used to be like that years ago, not anymore. Again, there was a demonstration of 200,000, I think, in Costa Rica, for goodness sake. It's a tiny, what's the population of Costa Rica? I don't know. 2 million? Not even that. Demonstration of 200,000 in Costa Rica against cuts. Now, if it was one or two countries, you could say, well, Alan, you're exaggerating. Why are you extrapolating? But it's not. It's not. It's everywhere. It's in one country after another. In Portugal, where in effect, the class struggle has been in abeyance for over 20 years, since the revolution. There's an enormous movement. Again, a demonstration, I think, of 200,000 in Lisbon a few months ago. And now recently, there's been further, I think, a demonstration of the teachers, I think it was 50,000 teachers. That was just about a week ago. In Lisbon, you know, wherever you look, in France, where the right wing won, Sarkozy won the election, it's true. And he tried it on, because the French workers are like the Italian workers, they don't accept any nonsense. And was immediately met with an outburst of strikes, demonstrations. French workers are very militant. And his popularity has collapsed. He will lose the next election, in my opinion. In other words, this is the class struggle is developing in one country after this in Barcelona. This movement of the bus drivers, which I mentioned, our comrades intervened in that quite effectively, I think, through the students' union. But again, the same thing against the trade union leaders and against the local council, against everybody. They stood up and said no. And that's going to happen in Britain, by the way. The trade union operative of commerce say, well, the trade union, the leaders will sell out. Well, it may be so. They'll sell out until they're forced not to sell out. They want a quiet life. But once the workers begin to move and say, that's it, we've had enough, then no apparatus in the world is going to stop them. That's the mistake of all the sects who write off the mass organizations. They don't understand the way the class moves. They paralyze. Because they only look at it from the top. They look from the top down. They don't look at from the bottom up. They don't look at it from the standpoint of the class. Once the workers stand up in any factory and say, that's it, I don't care what you say. That happened in Switzerland. You know, the boss, Des would be interested. The boss came along, the director said, well, can I speak to the men? The workers, rather. They said, yes, you can speak to us. But the first thing, we want to ask you one question. Does this plan mean redundancies, yes or no? He said, yes. He said, they said, out. They kicked him out, and they took the movement out of the hands of the union officials. And they won. They succeeded. Now, you see, anyone that looks at these, and by the way, I've just selected one or two. Plenty of other indices. It is clear that we're dealing here, first of all, with a global crisis of the capitalist system. Let's be clear. Let's call a spade a spade. They tried to cover it up, and they tried to say this, and they tried to say that. All of them, the bourgeois, the economists, the right reformers, the left reformers, and of course the piddling sects, who I repeat, every single one of their perspectives has been shown to be false. They're all singing the same song. Oh, no, there's nothing. They're like Nelson. You know, Nelson, he puts his telescope to his blind eye. Except they're blind in both eyes, so they don't have to resort to that. They see nothing. They understand nothing. You keep your eye on the main question, on the fundamental issue. The fundamental question is this. That globalization has now been revealed as a global crisis of capitalism, and it's a crisis at all levels, comrades, at all levels. Economic crisis, financial crisis, crisis of the banking system, political crisis, social crisis, military crisis. I haven't had time in this speech. In previous discussions, we've discussed quite a lot. Of course, you have the enormous power of American imperialism, which blinds some people, superficial people, ignorant people. Incidentally, this is one of the most violent periods in history. The amount which is spent on arms expenditure now dwarfs anything. That's been said. Yes, it's enormous power. Yes, of course it is. And there's been war after war. They're becoming particularly belligerent. Now, there's a struggle. And the struggle, of course, is not dictated by humanitarian purposes or any of the reasons which they give. It's, as it always, it's a struggle for raw materials, spheres of influence, and dominance, particularly in the case of American imperialism, yes. But with all this power, this colossal, this terrifying firepower which is at their disposal, it's never been seen in human history. I was recently reading one of Engels' articles about military tactics. He was very good on the subject, but I think he would have been astounded to see what the means of destruction, the mass destruction which they possess now, the satellites which can... They can photograph, they can film us speaking in this room. They probably are. Good afternoon. Good morning. Hope they learn something. It's astonishing what they... And with all this power, they're trapped in two unwinnable wars. They understand now that they're unwinnable. They can't win. 5 years after the occupation of Iraq, that was a war that was intended, as always, to plunder Iraq. Iraq has got colossal resources of oil. They intended to plunder Iraq. Incidentally, part of the reason for that is they're no longer confident about Saudi Arabia. Not confident at all about Saudi Arabia, which could fall at any time. Keep your eye on that. It could fall. Well, although what will replace it, that's another matter. But they wanted a solid base. They wanted a stable base, and they wanted to loot and plunder the oil. Have they succeeded in doing this? 5 years later? They haven't. They're trapped. They can't succeed. They know they can't, except for Bush, who's particularly thick, sorry. Particularly thick. They know they can't win. So the only question is when they get out and how they get out. And that ain't so easy. It's not so easy now. They're in the position now that whatever they do will be wrong. If they stay in Iraq, it'll be wrong. If they leave Iraq, what's going to happen? That's what concerns them. And all they've succeeded in doing is destabilizing the whole area. Destabilize the whole region, which is not in their interests. This is a stupid adventure. We pointed this out at the time. And now they pay the price for this. They cannot succeed. All that they can do now is to try to patch up some kind of a deal with Syria and Iran and hope for the best, get out as quickly as possible. As the British have got out of Basra. Not long ago, when they started this nonsense of attacking the Shiites in Basra, I said that they'd be defeated and they would try to call the British and Americans in, which is just what happened. They've got a bloody nose. They can't disarm the militias. And therefore, they're in a complete unholy mess. The same is true of Afghanistan. How can they win? The Afghans have defeated every single army of occupation since Alexander the Great. They defeated the British in a straight fight, as a matter of fact, astonishing state of affairs. The British ended up that they had to buy the tribal chiefs, who were very willing to be. Never mind about the Quran and all this stuff, they're interested in more substantial things. The trouble is that these tribal chiefs have got plenty of loot from the opium, which is, I think, probably 90% comes from Afghanistan now. World production of heroin is a very nice little hobby. They've destabilized Pakistan. Pakistan is a separate subject, which unfortunately I don't have time to deal with. Although you saw there the potential of the masses when Benazir Bhutto returned. 3 million people came on the streets. And again when she was assassinated. And there, of course, we have a strong base, but that's a separate, perhaps that's from the international report. But wherever you look, you see the same instability. And the powerlessness in ineffective imperialists, what can they do? I see that Karzai recently expelled, a couple of months ago, he expelled a couple of diplomats. One of them was British. Accused of what? Accused of negotiating with the Taliban. Of course they're negotiating with the Taliban. What do you want? That's an indication. That's the only way. They will negotiate and try to get out. Like a dog with its tail between its legs. And last but not least, I don't have, you see the problem that we face in dealing with world perspectives. It's a vast subject. But of course, we mustn't forget South America, where in effect, we predicted this some years ago. We said there's not a single stable bourgeois regime in any country in South America from Tierra del Fuego to the Rio Grande, and that's a fact. The It's been a fact up until now. Now it's even more of a fact. Because a crisis in the States, a recession, or even a slowdown in the American economy will have devastating effects, for example, in Central America, where many countries, including Mexico, whole areas of Mexico, I was in Mexico last year, the comments were explaining that whole areas of Mexico depend only on one thing, that's the remittances of the Mexican workers in the States. And these remittances are going to dry up. So what's going to happen to Central America? Work it out. I already give the details about food consumption in El Salvador. That applies for the whole of Central America. And South America also is linked to the North American economy. Now, if you look at the situation in South America, really, in the last few years, it's enough to make you weep. It really is enough to make you weep. You look at a situation like Bolivia. The workers of Bolivia, the working class, and we got these wretched people always whimpering about the working class, the supposedly not revolutionary, supposedly the low level of consciousness. I've even heard this of some comrades. Low level of consciousness of the working class. Where's the low level of consciousness in Bolivia? Comrades, what more do you want of the working class in Bolivia? Where they staged in the space of 18 months two general strikes and two insurrections and overthrew two governments. What do you want? What more do you want of the world? What more can they give than what they did? And if they did not succeed in what they wanted, which was to carry through the socialist revolution, and that is a socialist revolution and even a Trotskyist tradition in the Bolivian working class, particularly the miners, if they did not succeed, it was not their fault. The reason was given by one of the trade union leaders. What's his name?
Solaris,
yes. Solaris, one of the leaders of the COB, actually stated, this is an astonishing admission, he said, if we didn't take power because we didn't have a revolutionary party. I didn't say that, he said that. It's a fact. Another thing, the only thing that was missing, if the truth is to be told, the only thing that's missing in all these countries, and Britain, is the absence of the leadership, the absence of the subjective factor. With the result now that we have, first of all, the victory of Evo Morales, who's a reformist, a very weak man who understands nothing, and a ferocious onslaught of the bourgeois, of the right wing, the reaction, which is taken to the streets, which is actually threatening to break up Bolivia, and quite possibly it will all end very badly, although even there it wouldn't be the end of the story. But you see the enormous potential we've started to work now in Bolivia. We have a small section, the beginnings of a section. But what is required is this question of the leadership. And that is particularly striking in the case of Venezuela. An astonishing state of affairs. I think it's without precedent. The Venezuelan revolution has lasted for 10 years. When have we ever seen that? Normally in the past, a revolutionary situation like that would last 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, and then either be finished by the victory of reaction or the victory of the revolution. But here it's lasted, this situation of indecision, but of enormous movement of the masses, has lasted for 10 years. Again, I ask, where is the lack of consciousness? Where is the lack of revolutionary spirit on the part of the Venezuelan masses? The comrades have seen these marvelous videos, which Will and other comrades, Melanie, have produced. You see the enormous striving of the workers to take power. And the only thing which has prevented that from happening, even peacefully, because it could have happened after the collapse of the coup, which was defeated by the masses, the first time in the history of Latin America, by spontaneous movement of the masses who overthrew this coup, which had succeeded. It didn't prevent the coup. The coup had taken place with the army generals, the church, the bankers, all these gangsters were overthrown by the masses. One word from Chavez at that time and the thing could have been ended, and it could have been ended peacefully. Who was going to resist under those circumstances? Unfortunately, the word never came. And we're in a position now, you saw that in the December constitutional referendum, where they, for the first time that Chavez suffered a narrow defeat, that the situation now is in the balance. It can go any way. It can go either way, in my opinion. And therefore, the question in Venezuela also depends upon the subjective factor. It depends upon the speed with which the Marxist, the genuine revolutionary tendency in Venezuela can succeed in establishing a mass base which would enable it to pose the question which ought to be posed, which is the question of power. Now, comrades, my time is up, unfortunately. There are many more things that could be said. But you see, the problem for the bourgeois is this. You can express it, if you like, even in the form of a kind of equation. Or two formulas. The first statement is this. Given the crisis of the system, the bourgeoisie can, in no country in the world, can tolerate not just reforms. Reforms, you don't even talk about reforms anymore. When they start talking about reforms, you better reach for your revolver. The reforms mean counter-reforms in every case. Not only will they not give reforms, they cannot permit the continuation of the reforms that exist, that have been conquered painfully over decades, like the national health in Britain, which is under threat. The next discussion, we will look at this. Pensions. They want people to work till they're 70, in other words, in the knowledge that most of them will die before they receive this pensions. And that's true of every country in Europe. In other words, it's a ferocious counterattack, counteroffensive of the bourgeoisie. The bourgeois can no longer permit the existence of the present living standards, the semi-civilized existence, if you like, which the workers in the advanced countries have conquered over the last. They can't tolerate it. You must understand this. But the workers cannot tolerate further impositions of cuts. That's the other side of the equation. And therefore, what happens when the irresistible force meets the immovable object? What happens? You get an explosion. And there will be an explosion of the class struggle in every country. There's the beginnings of that, as I've explained quite clearly. And that will also be the case in Britain, which will catch up with the bang at a certain stage. And the other formula which I put forward would be this. That every attempt, the bourgeoisie, they want to establish a new equilibrium. That's the phrase the economist uses. What we have to do is to try to re-establish a new equilibrium. And Trotsky and Lenin dealt with that a long time ago. In the Second Congress of the Communist International, they said the following. Every attempt of the bourgeoisie to re-establish economic equilibrium will destroy the existing political and social equilibrium. That is a very profound formula which precisely expresses the present state of affairs. And therefore, comrade chairman and comrades, as Ted Grant stated a long time ago, we have now entered into the most turbulent, the most disturbed period, the most unstable period probably in human history, certainly since the Second World War. And in one country after another, time and time again, the workers will move to change society. There'll be many opportunities for us in Britain and internationally. The question is, the only question that's of the slightest importance here, is that we must be able to detect these possibilities, wherever they exist, any opening that exists, and exploit it to the full for the purpose of building the only instrument which can solve this dilemma of humanity, that is to say, the revolutionary tendency and the revolutionary international. Comrades, this is the great historical task which is on your shoulders and the shoulders of every member of the international Marxist tendency today.